This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and for whatever reason, I'm out of breath. I don't know why.
You stood up.
I stood up. So today, I'm sitting here with Art and AJ, father and son duo, hailing from the great state of Pennsylvania. Now AJ lives in Texas, but he's originally from Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon.
Hello. we embarked on an incredible journey here in central Wyoming, actually where we sit right now. I guess you'd say like eastern central Wyoming, I guess is probably the proper term. We came up here, if you recall back 2 years ago, we recorded an antelope hunting episode, which went pretty in-depth into our antelope adventures here in this part of the state. But this year we were back, and we were back for mule deer. And I think this year was a pretty unique year. One of the main reasons it was super unique is that we found out unique in a way because as we were talking to one of the taxidermists at the processor yesterday, and AJ, I'll actually let you explain this because you had the full conversation with him.
Sure. Yeah. We were talking to the taxidermist at the processor yesterday. And he was saying how recently the antelope numbers and the mule deer numbers in the surrounding area have been declining steadily. So a trend the past few years, just hit hard by CWD, EHD, hard winters, states issuing less tags every year. So
they reduced the numbers of antelope tags this year.
Yeah, they've been going down steadily, I think. We've seen, since we've been coming here 7 or 8 years ago. So unfortunately, the area's been hit very hard. He said a lot of guys this year went home, a lot of people went home this year with tags. They're unsuccessful, couldn't fill them, took their tags home. And we went 5 for 5. So he's like, you guys did a really good job, great work, that's incredible. So we're going to help you today, and Justin's going to kind of walk you through what we did. And some tips and tricks of the trade. It's early. Sorry, I can't get the words out.
So one thing I want to say is, like, I'm not going to go day by day. I know in the past we've talked, like, kind of steadily day by day through trips and stuff. But this one, we were out here for 5 days total. We still had an extra day and a half that we didn't need now, so we're actually packing up and heading back early today. But we thought we'd give you kind of sort of the, as AJ mentioned, the tips and tricks, the strategy behind it, and each will kind of come with a story as to like why we chose that and like the end result happening from the from that moment, from that decision, from that strategy piece that helped us sort of find success here. And this is all public land hunting. Some of it we've hunted for before, like 2 years ago, but most of this is kind of really new explored land for us. But I think the strategy is pretty applicable across the way. So I mentioned earlier, like we were coming out for mule deer, and I think AJ, you could tell the story of like of them coming up out of the ground, like where that originates from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So and I was reminded of that this trip. So a friend of mine years ago, her grandfather, who's still with us, he's in his 90s. He was a big hunter back in the day, and he would tell stories about hunting mule deer in Nebraska, and that, you know, you'd look across these fields, these open spaces, and think there's nothing out there, but then right at twilight, they seem to rise up out of the ground. And it's the deer coming out of these draws or ravines that have been bedded in and traveling in all day long. So we saw that happen on this trip multiple times, and it mm-hmm. kind of just sparked that memory for me.
And it's a cool thought because it's totally applicable. And I mean, I think the first day we set on one piece of land, like we were glassing pretty well, and like we saw a doe standing out in the middle of the field. The rains were about to come in, so it was cloudy. It was later in the evening, but it wasn't towards like twilight or sunset. So I think that like shadow or overcast period kind of like sparred her to like get up and, you know, like, oh, I'm going to start moving. It's evening time. And then she kind of, it was weird because she stood around because she's like, literally just stood there like, all right, well, I'm going to wait and see what happens. Like, it should be getting darker now. It should be getting darker now. And so for about 10 minutes, she just stood there. But also in the same moment, this, you know, was he was a 3x3, right?
He was, yeah.
He was like a 3x3, just rose up next to her, like literally out of nowhere. I was like, hey guys, there's a buck down there. But they literally just like popped up out of the ground. And I think we saw that in another instance. We were sitting in the same spot later that evening, and two forky bucks just like popped up out of the sage on this river bottom. Like I watched them like physically appear just like bloop out of this like pile of sage, and I never would have guessed they were there. But we continuously, as we walked some of the country midday, or like if we were following game or trying to get a good stock, like you would see a bush that was probably, I don't know, about the size of a baby stroller. And then behind it, there would be like a little bedded area. And you're like, I would never see that deer if they were completely laid down in here. So it's interesting, that sort of hole, they pop up out of the ground, because they really do. And then like as you look across the terrain, if you're standing eye level with the terrain, it just looks flat. But then as you go out and walk through it, you're down, you're up, you're in, you're like all these little ravines and little pockets and broken pieces of land, like I think is the best way to describe it. And, you know, river bottoms, creek bottoms, dried creek bottoms, that then turns into like a deer superhighway. And we'll touch a little bit more on that later. Art, anything to add on the environment?
Well, that's where I got my buck. He came up out of the ground.
Yep.
And it could be the rain or the snow melt that starts these ravines. And that's, like you say, that's where they like to lay. They like to hide in there, and they'll bed down. And as you go by or look across, as you're glassing them, you don't see nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You turn your head, you look back, all of a sudden, there they are. It's perfect. Very interesting.
It's yep. crazy. I think one thing, so also, so we all put in for antelope tags, both AJ, myself, Colin, Ben, and Casey, and Art.
Yep.
Sorry. All put in for antelope tags as well. The only two that were able to draw was Colin and myself, and ironically, we both drew two, which, you know, was very interesting. And it's crazy because this, I believe, you know, 5 years ago, this would have been a spot like anybody that put in for it would have drawn it. And I think so. I think the reduction in numbers over the past couple of years is probably in the tags. Well, the antelope numbers have caused the Fish and Game Commission here to reduce the number of tags allocated. And I think that that was really shown through in that of like everybody that drew, only two people drew. And of those two people, they only drew, you know, they two of them drew two, which I still think is interesting. Colin wasn't able to make it. He had some personal stuff going on that conflicted with the timing, so that's okay. We did, surprisingly, so the way that I pictured antelope going was like our primary focus would be the mule deer because we all three had mule deer tags. And then the antelope tags was in the same zone for the same time. And so our focus was kind of put in the same area, but the antelope would be like, oh, if we come across it, we'll you know, go for antelope. Well, that very much happened on the first day. And I think this piece of strategy comes into focus because, you never know where antelope are going to show up, and two, like, hunting pressure drives those animals around a lot. And the place we found them at, I would never expect them to find, which it was great mule deer country. We, like, get there, hike up this ridge, get in to the top of this ridge, which is about half mile from where we parked, and get up on this ridge and look down into this little bowl, and it was BLM that connected to a big chunk of state land, and our plan was to go in there, set up on the BLM side, glass across this valley on the ridge line, and look down for bedded mule deer with the spotting scope and, you know, all that stuff, and kind of move around. It was a very small access point, I guess you could say. Like, it was steep on either sides, big bluffs, so may not have been that interesting. Well, we pop up over this ridge, spot a mule deer grazing a doe, and then work our way kind of away from her so we don't spook her. And we're trying to figure out how to get kind of like around to see if there's any other deer with her. And then as we're trying to figure out how to get our way around, down in this little valley, probably a half mile or so away, we see a herd of antelope, and likely the biggest Boone and Crockett antelope buck I've ever seen, right?
Yeah, he was, we were a half mile away, and you see this black spot above his head, and you're like, oh boy, that's a good buck.
Yeah.
And put the glass on him, we're both like, he's probably one of the top three biggest buck we've seen in Wyoming anywhere over the past 7 or 8 years. And as fate would have it, no buck tags in our pockets. So that's how it goes.
So really interesting. But with that, there were a number of other antelope with him, and I carried two doe tags. So we then pivot almost immediately, and I was like, I'm going to go down, and I'm going to harvest one of these antelope. And so AJ and his dad stayed up. Or AJ and Art, sorry, I keep calling AJ's dad.
That's fine.
What he is. It's not inaccurate.
AJ and Art are up on the hill, and they're kind of watching. They're kind of watching me and watching the herd. So the herd was really kind of undisturbed. Even though they noticed us, they didn't really care, which was good because this was also the opening day of the season. I think had that been like 4 days later, like their attitude may have been a little different. But I headed down, so always, somebody brought it up the other day, I think it was, they commented on my personal bio page on the website. They're like, listen to your most recent episode, which was our Colorado antelope episode. They're like, how can we get some stock, some pointers on stalking antelope? And I don't know if he specifically meant antelope, but I'll take it for that because it was the antelope episode and we're here. First off, I'll give this tip, is don't ever expect that the antelope don't see you, because they likely do and they just don't care. Or if they do see you, they're going to start first, their intuition is to move slowly, and then they'll run when spooked pretty easily. Second, judge your terrain, use your terrain. If you're in a spot where you can see the terrain really well, then use that to your advantage. You want to put land points between yourself and the herd, kind of almost the entirety of your movement, because they can, their vision's so good they can detect any movement. And don't rush it. There's no need to rush it. You got to go slow. You got to move slow. You got to think pretty methodically. Like, a lot of the places where you will find antelope, there's not good cover, but there are features where there are sorts of like gullies, taller grasses, sage. Like, don't be afraid to crawl and get in the dirt and move around. Like, if you want to get the shot, get in the shot. Another tip with stalking, be comfortable to shoot to like 300 yards, because sometimes you're not going to be able to close that distance. I think for me, all my antelope have been taken under 3. I think with my most being at like 280 and my closest being at like, I don't know, 40 yards.
40, yeah. Archery range, yeah.
Yeah. So it really just depends on that. My technique is like, as I move and use the land features, I move and then I kind of keep the herd blind for a little bit, and then I may just pop up really slowly over a feature and just get a good pulse on them. And I'll generally do that like 2 or 3 times when I'm going. And then I'll find a spot and I try to get set up so the herd is coming to me versus me going completely to the herd. And that's a way, because then they're just naturally kind of grazing and they're just moving. With that, I think another tip, obviously having a rangefinder, being comfortable on your rifle, those are two big ones. And then pick an antelope, wait for it to get a good shot, and then go ahead and take that. So that is exactly what I did. I went down the ridge using this creek bed as cover. And this, as I said earlier, this creek bed was like a super highway for deer and antelope. So I cruised down through there, got to where I thought they were going to be, and slowly peeked up. And yeah, they were there. They were actually much closer than I thought they were going to be, because they had moved to my left more as I was walking, which was good. But I got, I think, what did I say, 180? 186 was the one.
I thought you were 125. Was that the first one?
No, 125 was my mule deer.
Okay.
186 was the antelope. And so I carried 2 tags, and I intended to fill 1 off this herd. So I shot. She, like, it was a perfect, you know, as I inspected later, it was a perfect, like, double lung right below the back strap, just above the shoulder blade. Like, I think I lost the back part of the shoulder blade a little bit on her, but everything else was pretty much intact. And she dropped immediately. So another thing with antelope is oftentimes if they don't know where the shot came from, they won't initially just sprint. And if they do sprint, they'll stop, because now they've got like a comrade left behind. And so in this instance, that's exactly what happened. They ran about 30 yards and they stopped, and they were on this hillside. So it put, I noticed the big antelope buck, a smaller antelope buck, and a doe were all kind of standing facing towards me, and they were looking back at the doe that I just shot. And I made the decision there. I was like, we jokingly said, fill 2 tags off 1 herd, like, it would be a great feat if it was possible. And I was like, you know what? I don't know if this opportunity is going to present itself again anytime during our trip, if there's going to be an antelope or if it's going to take away from mule deer hunting or whatever. So I racked another round. I saw that the antelope were still there. They were starting to get a little fidgety, so I knew they were going to move. And I put a basically like a shot in the doe antelope directly in the front of her chest. And it entered the front of her chest and exited out of the top of her shoulder. So I did lose a little bit on that one, because it kind of like blew away some on that front quarter. But she went backwards and essentially just fell exactly where she was. So knocked out 2 tags within, I don't know, we walked into that place at what, 10:30?
Yeah, about 10:30.
About 10:30 we walked in, and we had quartered, stripped all the meat off, neck meat, tenders, heart, everything. And we're back at the truck by 12:30.
I think we were leaving at 12:30.
We were leaving.
We had to walk out.
We had to walk back. So I think we got there by like 1.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, either way, like, it was good. And it was a mile and a half back, roughly, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, holy smokes, what a great start to the trip. But there are some antelope stalking tips for the person that asked. I will answer your message, your comment on my bio page and tell you to listen to this episode so that you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, any additional topics or thoughts to add to antelope stocks?
I think you can't overemphasize being patient and going slow. And there's an example we'll give later on in the hunt where that kind of bit us in the behind. We rushed things, went too fast,
yeah,
and things went south. And also, you have to enjoy it. So I've noticed a lot of times when I talk to non-hunters about hunting, the first thing they think of and ask about is the shooting. And shooting is such a very small part of the overall equation that it's not my most favorite part of hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, yes, you have to be able to shoot. You have to be competent and accurate and all that. But it's the stalk. Like, I enjoy the stalk the most. So if you don't enjoy it, you probably won't get good at it. If you enjoy it and, you know, really think about it, strategize, reflect on it, be patient, learn from it, be observant, you'll get better and better with more experience each time.
It's like a game of chess. Mm-hmm. Like the antelope are doing a couple moves. You're sure. Doing a couple moves. You're reacting. You know, what is it? Rook, tonight, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Insert chess lingo there. Let's talk a little bit about the use of some tools. And so these tools end up being bikes. So we brought bikes, mountain bikes, with the intent that we had one piece of land that we'd hunted 2 years ago and had good success at. It's actually where Art shot his mule deer. Mm-hmm. And I had the shot opportunity at a mule deer, but it was a little too outside of my comfort zone. But we knew there were deer in this area. We also knew there were antelope in this area, but we weren't worried about that anymore. So we had the bikes, and I don't know, one of you guys want to talk a little bit about the bikes?
They're pedal bikes,
yep.
First and foremost, not e-bikes, so powered by us and our legs. So Justin and I had kind of bought some used fat tire bikes over the summer, kind of rebuilt them and kind of got them set up to be hunting rigs. So racks in the back, saddlebags for carrying meat out, hopefully, clamps on the handlebars to be a gun rack. And so they were pretty nice, pretty comfy.
Yeah.
My dad, you know, he unfortunately, I mean, he doesn't hunt as much as Justin and I do, so to invest in a bike like that, probably not a good idea. So Justin picked up a $25 bike off of Facebook Market or something, I'm assuming.
Yep, yep.
Probably about as old as I am. I think I'm 42, so it looked to be about that.
It was probably from the 90s, like.
But hey, it worked, and you know, it saved our legs several miles that day. And even if you're coasting downhill on the brakes, it's like a vacation than hiking down. It's a big, big game changer. So that was new this year. It's a little extra work, dragging more gear up here from Texas and Colorado and, you know, dealing with the bike rack in the back of the truck and dropping that down, open the tailgate back up, bike rack back up. A bit of a pain, but if you were packing out meat, you know, downhill for 2 miles inside the coast, it just makes things a lot easier.
Well, that too, and we had to push the bikes at certain points because it was just too steep. It was easier to walk. But I think the portion that we pushed them was much smaller than the portion that we coasted or rode.
Mm-hmm.
So it did, I think, goodness, what did it take us that year? When we walked it in, I think it was
all day.
It was like a 3 hour.
Yeah, that was like, we did 4.5 miles in walking.
Yeah.
Did a huge loop. We packed out a deer 2.5 of those miles back. Like, that was a full day.
Yeah.
And we were beat.
Yeah.
Like, we had another hard day the next day. And then 2 days later, we woke up, we're like, we need an easy day.
Yeah, yeah.
Which turned out to be a river crossing and not an easy day. But yeah, it kind of whipped our butts 2 years ago.
But I don't think it did as much this time. So like we definitely covered the 2.5 miles in a much quicker pace. I think only like 30 minutes. It probably took us 30, yeah. 45 minutes to cover that with coasting and pushing and then equal on the way back. So that part was good. Do you want to talk about your bike experience?
Well, I'll tell you what, I didn't have the mounts on my handlebars to hold my gun. I didn't have saddlebags on my bike. So I was a little top heavy with my backpack and my rifle. And it wasn't easy steering that bike through the roads because the roads are either washed out or whoever goes back there with the quad to check maybe fence lines, property. It was a little bit tough maneuvering.
Yeah.
The type of bike I had.
When was the last time you were on a bike?
It's been a while. I can remember putting baseball cards in the spokes. That was probably before I got my driver's license when I was 16 years old. So it's been a while since I was on a bike. But I was able to maneuver it.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy, but I did it. And my butt paid for it.
Yeah, sorry about the seat.
Yeah.
It's not exactly a padded cushion seat.
But they had nice bikes. The thing about bikes, I think, if you could put something on the back that you don't have to carry your backpack, it would give you better balance, and you would be able to stand up on the bike.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't have to be taking that rough terrain, all the bounces and the jarrings. And you can maneuver it better.
Yeah, it lowers your sense of your point of gravity, your center of gravity, I guess.
I couldn't do that with my bike. I basically, if I didn't sit, I was putting my feet on the ground and stopping.
Yeah.
You know, but.
No, thanks for being a good sport.
It worked
on that trial run.
It worked out, yeah. So.
No, it was fun. We ended up using the bikes another point too, which we pushed them probably a mile and a half up this slope to get into some new land, and then we rode the top of the ridge. Art didn't join us on that one. That one was just AJ. We positioned Art in another spot in another piece of land in a river bottom based on sort of the strategy we'll talk about next. But that, I think, was... Two things were cool about it. Cool, the road was really well worn down and pretty level. Second, the part that I didn't like was that there were vehicles driving back there, and it was state land, and I don't think they were supposed to be driving back there at all. We had a conversation with the state biologist when I checked my antelope, and they were asking us if they were e-bikes and stuff like that. And we're like, no, they're pedal bikes. He's like, good answer, because you can't use e-bikes on state land. And we're like, yeah, we know. Like, that's why we have the pedal bikes. I think it was a point of interest, too. A rancher had seen us hunting another piece of land and then saw us coming out that night and stopped and talked to us and was like, I saw your guys' bikes back there on the truck and another, you know, this morning. And so we had a good conversation about that. But definitely a useful tool. I think really good for here. I'll definitely look at using them again in Colorado, depending on where I'm hunting and what I'm hunting. I think it'd probably be far more usable out in the eastern plains, but also good, like AJ mentioned, even if you're not riding it, if you're using it as like a game cart that you can also ride and like hang meat bags on and then push them down or push them around, it's still easier than carrying all that weight on your back, because I mean those fat tire bikes are, they can support, you know, I'm 200 pounds, my pack was probably 40, and then you know, 240, 300 pounds on the bike itself. And then you can kind of mess with that weight as you need it. But I think pretty cool tool to have in the toolbox.
Yeah. And we, just to clarify, we rode two tracks.
Yeah.
So dirt two tracks, what we went in. Any rougher than that, I think you can't. It's just too rough. You can't do it. And get a good mount for your rifle with a lot of rubber and padding in it. Because you get knocked around a little bit. You don't think so. I think the road looks pretty smooth, but little bumps, or even like the cow hoof prints that were left
From the rain,
mud that then dried, those were knocking me around pretty good, surprisingly. So I actually checked my rifle after that second day, around BLM land. So I went out to 100 yards, shot it, and it was still dead on, which I was happy about because I lost confidence.
Yeah.
And I don't want to lose confidence, so my rifle was true when I needed it later in the week, so I checked it to be sure.
And it was good. So, that's perfect.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mule Deer Monday. So this was my mule deer. So I think the important message this is like overlooked spots, small pieces of land. I'm a big advocate for this is like check all the pieces of land because oftentimes things are going to get overlooked. People that solely stick to hunting the road may or may not overlook these little chunks of land because they're like, oh, from the road, this doesn't look very productive. But then you get into it, which may only be like 100 yards, and you've got this like ideal habitat. So that Monday, what happened is that I wanted to go to another piece of land that was had some good long gullies, bluffs, fingers, some trees in it, but the wind was not cooperating for me to get in there without blowing out the whole area. So that day, Art set a creek bottom, AJ set kind of a ridgy tree line area, and he had suggested another place to me, and I was like, that's fine. So the wind for that spot was actually perfect, and I essentially just walked straight into the wind, which was really, really good. And I got to the point where I was at the ridge line. I was like, all right, this looks good. It's like it's a bluff on one side, which I was on. And then on the other side, there was like a gully or creek bottom that was pretty deep. And then there were some rolling hills on the other. And then like from there on, it opened up really well. So I set up, I was actually standing trying to find a place to go, and a doe and three yearlings pop up. I'm like, cool, I just kind of stand there and let them be. They had no idea I was there. The wind was in my favor, and they just kind of moved up out of the way. So then I go, and I get set up in this little pocket of a rock. It's like a perfect little bench seat. It's got nice space to sit, got a nice place to lean against my back. And I'm like, oh, this is good. My rifle at my side, get my pack situated there. And no sooner than I was, like, settled, I look up, and there's, like, two deer looking at me. And one of those deer, I'm like, oh, it kind of looks like he has antlers, but he's very small body. The other one, I was like, ooh, looks like an older doe, so it's probably like a doe with a yearling buck. And so I said, all right, I'm gonna bring up my binos. So I very slowly unzipped, brought up my binos, looked at the first deer. Yep, little forky. Looked at the second deer, a bigger forky, but a forky nonetheless, bigger body. And I was like, all right, well, let me range them. Slowly pulled out my rangefinder, shoot a little range, 125, 128, I forget what it was, to the bigger of the two. And I was like, perfect. This is great. So rangefinder away, slowly rack around in my rifle, pick my rifle up, put it on my knee, steady it, boom, shoot. And get over there, and I message AJ, and AJ had like a very similar experience in the piece, which he can talk about. But I look at my Onyx to see, like, all right, are we going to quarter? Are we going to drag? Like, what are we going to do? I'm 200 yards from the road. Like, there was a bend in the road, and I just happened to be settled in this pocket that I didn't realize I was that close. So the plan is then, you know, get the deer gutted, ready to go, and then drag it to 200 yards. But, like, that's that emphasis piece for, like, a small pocket of land just, like, holding deer. That someone was literally camped a half mile, quarter mile from there on the ridge just above where I'd set the night before. Like, that evening we saw them breaking down, and then we're like, oh, we should sit this area tomorrow. But I'll let AJ tell you about his experience at that place, because it was very, very similar.
Yeah. So that area was interesting. It's it's right on a main road, cuts right through a big piece of BLM land, about 2 square miles. And the day before, we saw 4 bull elk bear, juvenile elk.
Yep.
We saw antelope. We saw mule deer. So there's good activity. So I went in about maybe a half mile just before you went in, Justin. And I was still hunting into the wind, up and down these fingers and ravines. And that's one of my favorite ways to hunt. Just go really slow into the wind, really quiet, stealthy, kind of stay in the shadows behind trees, etc. And I happened to come up on top of a finger at the same time as 2 mule deer, doe, and 3 yearlings did. They didn't see me, so I slowly crouched down and I stayed there. And they just kind of fed and grazed and meandered within to 10 yards from me. And really relaxed, they were feeding, they were kind of grooming each other, kind of chilled out. So I was hunched down there for, I don't know, probably 10 minutes. The point where it gets uncomfortable, things start cramping and hurting. And meanwhile, my pocket, my phone is vibrating, and it's Justin texting me. And I heard the shot, so I'm like, well, he has one. So I slowly stood up, and I, you know, the animals, I spooked them, and the deer took off. So I worked up around that ridge, still into the wind, hunting this bigger ravine, worked my way over to Justin. And, you know, by the time I got over to him, which was half an hour or 45 minutes later, I had seen 19 doe and yearling and 1 antelope in that piece of property that how many hunters, hundreds, had just drove through on their way just to go deeper into, you know, other land or deeper into the wilderness. So again, it's like, don't overlook spots. I mean, hunt areas that people won't hunt or they think there's nothing there. And like, we've had great success here in Wyoming in the past years doing that. It's been a great strategy.
Yeah. And I think even, you know, a 400 yard by 1 mile piece of land can still hold deer. Yeah. They just have to be on it the moment you are, or antelope. They just have to be there when you're there. But if you're not there, you're not going to find the opportunity. So definitely don't overlook those smaller patches. And like, yeah, it's happened so many times where even finding game in the places you don't expect it, it's always a surprise. So just like, be prepared as well for that. Anything to add, Art, for that day?
Well, he dropped me off in that one ravine there, and there was a 3 doe that I saw, and then some other hunters came walking in.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, but a lot of the hunters there were road hunters.
Yep.
And they, a lot of people won't go into the ravines. They just ride by, and if they see something,
they'll get out and stalk it.
They'll get out and stalk it, yeah.
Yeah, and so, I mean, we saw that countless times, people stopping, watching. I mean, if I see deer on the side of the road, I'm going to, obviously, on public land, I'm going to stop and watch and think about if I'm going to stalk them or not. But not to say that it's not a productive way, but there's definitely a more productive way to get off the road and go find animals. And I think that's attuned to probably our success, especially in Wyoming. But I want to talk a little bit about exploring new lands. It's a good segue into it. Understanding movements, patterns, and scouting, and strategy. Those all kind of like really come into play. And I mentioned earlier, like, most of the land we were hunting, we hunted for the first time this year, with the exception of the place that we hunted the most, and then the pizza oven, which we biked into, and then that was actually a hunting pressure issue too, because like, we get in there, get off our bikes, get them chained up, get to the top of the ridge, and as we get to the top of the ridge, we bumped a buck and a doe, and then saw a doe and 2 yearlings at the top there, but then this guy comes bebopping up the 2-track from basically the direction we were facing. He came up, so he had blown out essentially like an entire, I don't know what, 4 square mile,
piece of land. 4 square mile valley, yeah.
And we talked to him, and he's like, yeah, I just walked all the roads, did this, like, and we're just like, oh, man. Yeah. So that day, we saw
public
deer.
Land. It's public land. Anyone can do anything.
Yeah. We saw deer, though, still that day. We just didn't see any legal bucks. But it's a bummer.
It was a disappointment.
Yeah, especially because we worked hard to get back there on the bike, too. Mm-hmm. And we had high hopes because we had, in our mind, had talked it up the whole, you know, since we were there last time, when we'd seen like what, five good sized mule deer back there on that piece of land.
The original plan was to camp there and hunt that for 6 days. And I'm glad we pivoted and didn't do that and went to other areas.
That's a good strategy too, is like, don't be afraid to move. Don't be afraid to explore new lands. But if you go explore new lands and you're not seeing a sign or you're not seeing movement, quickly move to the next spot. Like, don't get hung up on one piece of property unless you're seeing deer. And I think that's a good segue to, we finally settled on this piece of state land, ironically, very near to one of the towns that we commonly hunt at. And probably the nearest piece of land to that town.
I'd have to look at a map, but it's very close.
Yeah. And that is the same place that I had shot and lost my mule deer 2 years ago, where we had to go back, get the warden, go into private land, blood track it, and essentially never find it. So very surreal coming back and that being the piece of land that we hunt most, because not a lot of great memories for me there. But I created some new good memories. So then I shifted my focus, because I had filled my mule deer tag from, I was no longer hunter. I was like cameraman and tag along, coffee maker. so we decided to go hunt that piece of land. And I think that piece of land was very unique, and the way that we hunted it turned out to be really fun. But we got in on one of the ridges and just stood, sat over this creek bottom, and basically a big open area full of smaller, I would say smaller gorges and gullies. But that's where we saw initially that first evening, we saw that first doe and buck, and then subsequently later seeing more deer that evening moving around. And so we really honed in on that piece of land. One, it was kind of easy for us to get in and out of. We could set up on that ridge, and I think we started to understand the movements better and better on that property as we sat there. And I think that goes into sort of like that scouting piece, is like, if you don't have the opportunity to go and scout someplace beforehand, like, you're going to have to spend a couple days looking at it and seeing deer, understanding what they're doing, and then adjusting your strategy around that, which is kind of what we did. And I'll let you guys talk a little bit about this, because this was more your hunting experience than mine there.
Yeah. I think that spot was attractive. We kept going back, and we kept seeing deer. And the buck-to-doe ratio was inverted. We were seeing like three or four bucks to every doe. And, you know, no, these weren't Boone and Crockett bucks, but they were nice bucks, they were legal bucks, and that's what we're after. So it was hard to go somewhere else, knowing that when you kept going there in the morning and the evening, you kept seeing deer, you kept seeing opportunity. So originally we set up on a ridge, we were glassing the area below, and realized that in the morning they moved one way, evening they moved the other, always up this river bottom and following the ravines. And there were a couple times where I tried to get in a good position to shoot on this ridge. You're laying in shale, you're angled downwards, your feet are above your head and prone, and it's a very awkward position to shoot, and it was, you know, 3 to 370 away, and I just couldn't get comfortable with the shot, and the deer weren't stopped. They were moving, they're traveling, so there wasn't a whole lot of time. So it happened twice, and I didn't shoot. I didn't feel confident. And so that's when we thought about a different strategy, where to go. So it all kind of, you know, kind of came into the last day, which was yesterday, with that morning. And my dad sat on the bottom of a bluff, just elevated enough to kind of see the area below behind some brush in the morning, and kind of watching, waiting for traffic. So I'll stop the story there. I'll tell my part later and let my dad tell his experience yesterday morning.
I want to, before we go, I do want to say, like, we're not just going to share the good and the good here without the bad. So we did one of those days. I was with AJ and we were putting a stock. It was the morning. We were putting the stock on, actually it wasn't yesterday morning. It was the day before in the morning. And we were putting a, so we found a buck moving pretty quickly we'll say to the northeast.
Yeah.
Northwest. It would be northwest, I think.
It was the morning, right?
Yeah.
That was one where I couldn't get steady.
Yeah.
I couldn't take the shot. And do you want me to finish it up?
Sure.
Okay. So couldn't get steady, couldn't take the shot. And so this deer was, he was moving. He was on a mission. He was all alone. And so I look at Justin. I'm like, you know, what should we do? You want to go get him? And we're like, sure, why not? Let's go for a hike. So my dad stayed there on the ridge. He watched the bottoms looking for any more traffic that came through. Justin and I peel off. And so we're stalking this deer knowing that it's moving.
Very quickly.
It was quick, yeah. So you're shedding jackets, shedding layers quickly.
And losing it's early morning, headlamps.
I lost headlamp. I found it. I found it the next day. So we go down, basically going down and up over bluffs, looking to see if he's in that next ravine in front of us. And we went down and over two different bluffs. So, you know, you go going down elevation, up, back down, back up. And then got to a point where we thought we lost him. We're about a mile in. I was behind a big rock. I think I was taking off a jacket or something, and you were behind a ridge. And then I'll hand over to you.
Oh, I wasn't even behind a ridge. I was standing there like, just like, I don't know if I was fiddling with my camera, if I was just looking around with my binos or what, but I saw him. I saw two mule deer, both bucks, probably, I don't know, 230 yards away.
They were on private.
Yeah, they were on private, yeah. But they were a ways away. And I see them, and I just freeze. And one of them gets spooked by something. I don't think it was me. But he goes to run up this ridge, and then doesn't. And the other one, he stops, and the other one is just standing there, like looking at him, like, "Dude, what are you doing?" And so then they both come down and they start working towards me, and they close down to me within about. They close probably 30 yards closer, and then one of them dips into the ravine and goes to the left. Well, the land to the left is. If he follows the rain, pops out and ends up being public land again. If they were to go to the right, it follows down and it pops out and it becomes public again. So either way, we're kind of in like this really good position. But they're like they're spooked, but they're still moving. So they both kind of the other deer feeds down into that ravine and just kind of hangs out underneath this tree. I was like, oh man, he's probably gonna bed down there on private. We're just gonna have to wait him out. And then the other deer comes back from the left now to the right, meets him, and then they both work their way to the right. And at this point, I had, got AJ's attention, and he had seen them. And so they're moving to the right. Well, in front of us is this giant bluff, humongous. I don't know, probably 200.
It was a big, steep bluff, yeah.
And so initially I thought, oh, we're going to go around the edge, peek over, we'll see him in the ravine. And then I'm following AJ, and AJ just goes up the side of this bluff. And I'm like, okay, here we go. Up the side of the bluff we go. So we climb this steep bluff, 200 feet, 300 feet up. It's pretty tall. And I'll switch back over to AJ.
Yeah. So I didn't go in front of the bluff. I thought about doing it, but it was very close to being the border of private land, and so I wanted to make sure I was well within public land. So I wanted to go up over top of that bluff, knowing that the other side was, in fact, BLM land, no question about shooting on private land, and also make sure I got in front of these deer. So went up and over that bluff, got to the top, immediately saw the deer. We were way ahead of them, probably 200-300 yards. They were still, though, probably about 400 yards away from us. So we decided to then walk towards them behind the cover of the bluff on the other side. Went down there, kind of crept over. There's plenty of cover. There's good buck brush up there and good cover. I saw some mountain lion tracks up there, too, which were interesting to see in that area. But laid down on the mountain lion tracks in some dirt, just in prone position, looking down at the bucks. I think I ranged them at 220.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time, the sun was starting to come up. So this is a situational awareness of your stock. You don't want to get skylined, right? And be very aware of your shadows, when the sun is low in the sky casting long shadows, that shadow goes a long way on the land in front of you, and a little movement is really amplified, and animals will see that. So we're laying there, or I'm laying there on top of the bluff getting ready to shoot. Justin is behind me. He's spotting. He's got binos up. He's watching. And I'm looking through the scope, and you know, the one buck's looking right at me. And you know, at that point, Justin kicks my leg, and he's like, "Hey, are you sure they're on public land? It could be private." And I kind of look back, and he's kind of standing up, and I'm like, "Hey," I'm like, "Don't get skyline. Watch your shadows. You know, let's be careful." And I look back through the scope, and both bucks are gone. They spook.
Yeah. Man, I felt really bad. One, because I blew that, but two,
we don't know that. It could have been me. We don't know.
I think they were spooky to begin with as well, but yeah. In retrospect, we're like, yeah, they were definitely on, like, they were on private land still. Mm-hmm. So that was a little less more comforting, but I couldn't get another vantage point of them. And in past, like, I've learned very much to stay on the buck, like, until they're down, and make sure that they're down and, like, a good amount of period has gone, and not lose sight of that. Because, like, AJ and I lost one in California, you know, 10 years ago that I still think about to this day. And, you know, I lost mine. Mine wasn't the same, but it's like, I don't want to lose deer. I don't want anybody to lose deer. Mm-hmm. And so that works well to transition to Art and Art's last day of not losing deer.
Yes.
Go ahead. Let's hear your story. So I'll set the scene.
All right.
It's early morning.
Well, I'll even. how about if I go the day before, like when you guys were out doing your run, and I was sitting in the riverbed.
Sure, we can talk about that.
And because I was in the riverbed to get a closer shot of of where the roadway was of those deer that was going back and forth, especially that morning when we saw that buck that was going to the northwest.
Yep.
And he disappeared, and then you guys took off after him. That afternoon, I went in the riverbed, and I'm sitting in the riverbed, and it's very warm now.
It's the hottest day we were here, I think, that day.
70.
I mean, it was like we were dressed for like 24 degrees in the morning, but then
We weren't.
But you were. Art's very good at layering.
So anyway, I'm in the riverbed, and I'm right in the sun. The sun is just beating down on me. So I'm taking clothes off, and I'm waiting for something to move or, you know, come in, because that's the way the deer were running that day.
Yep.
Right? And then I'm looking back up over my head, because the river, I'm probably about 6 feet down in the gully. And my son is telling me earlier that day, well, I saw lion tracks. And I'm thinking, these four bulls come running in to where I'm sitting about 90 yards away from me.
Cows, moo cows, not elk. Yeah, bulls.
Bulls.
Right.
Bulls with horns. Yeah, on. Horns.
Cattle.
Yep. Yeah, cattle. And now they're looking at me, and I'm thinking, what am I going to do? You know? I took my red hat off because I didn't know if that one bull, he looked mean, you know? But they stayed there for probably 15 minutes, and they were watching me, and I'm thinking, wow, if these bulls can see me, the deer are going to see me too. And what chased those bulls into that riverbed that fast? Because he kept looking back behind him. So in the meantime, I'm looking up over my shoulders. Is there a mountain lion coming down here or what? I mean, you know,
you never know, I guess.
It just turned out that that's the only thing I saw there that day.
Well, the good thing is the next day we were in that same area, and we never saw any mountain lion tracks on the ground there.
No,
so
it
was not, in fact, a mountain lion that we know.
the next morning we went in, and that's when you guys put me at the base of that
bluff.
Yep. The bluff.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
And I was still within 100 yards or 150 yards of where the deer were running back and forth, which was good. And then you guys went back up to the ridge where you saw those two buck.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was sitting there, nothing came in the morning, but I heard AJ shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then he texted me that to hang around there for a couple hours because they were going to be busy taking care of his deer. And I was sitting there looking over to my right. I turn around, all of a sudden this buck pops up out of the ground.
Just comes out of the ground.
Just comes out of the ground. And you wouldn't know those fingers or ridges or the washouts were there unless you got on that property and walked. Because if you were out on the road or up on the ridge looking across there, it looks just like a flat land.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. There's a lot of gullies in there. And when this buck came up, I saw it was a legal buck. I didn't even have to see how far away he was from me because I knew he was in shooting range, and I took the shot.
Yep.
And he was walking away from me when I took the shot because I figured, well, I'm going to take the shot. He's in range, and if he keeps walking away, I'm not going to be able to get the shot, and I'm going to miss out on my first mule deer this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the shot. He stopped, turned around, and he was looking at me, so I took another shot at him. And I noticed him, he like shivered a little bit, went down, and I lost him. He went out of my scope. I couldn't find him. So I texted Justin and said that, you know, I took a shot at a deer. I'm going to go look for him and take it from there. So I put my backpack on, got my gun, and I started walking to where I last saw the deer. And I'm walking around. I don't see no blood. I'm walking in circles, zigzagging back and forth. I cannot find this deer. I know he's there somewhere. I saw him go down, but I could not find the deer. So I texted them back. I said, can't find blood, can't find the deer. And they said, just stay tight. Mm-hmm. And it was, I don't know, half hour, 40 minutes later, they came down, mm-hmm. and we did a search, and AJ found a buck. He was in a gully.
So we had, I think there's two stories running parallel at the moment, the last day. We're about a mile apart from each other. We'll come back to my Justin story later. We'll finish off yours now. So Justin and I are packing mine out, and we go down, we see you in your spot, and we say, okay, we drop our packs, have the meat in the shade for my deer. It's about 10 o'clock at this time. We say, okay, let's recreate the situation. So you went to where you were sitting when you shot.
Where I shot, yeah.
I was spotting. Justin went out, and we got Justin to a spot where you took your
first shot.
And then we said, okay, where was the second shot? He took the position there. So based on your description, how the animal reacted, we felt that this deer is dead somewhere within 500 yards. This thing's probably pretty close. So there was no blood trail.
No blood.
No tracks.
Nope.
Didn't know which direction it ran. So that's about a, what is that, quarter square mile area to search.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty big. So we just turned on the Onyx tracker, Justin and I, so we look at where we covered, and started doing kind of, I don't know if it's quadrants or zigzagging through.
I'd say expanding zigzags.
Yeah. Expanding zigzags. So then I couldn't help but think of the landscape. And the fact that you said you lost it, disappeared, I'm like, this thing went to a ravine. It went down. It got out of sight. Because you think you can see right across there.
Yeah.
You can't. There's hills in the way.
Yeah.
So I started checking the ravines. Went up a big ravine, down another. The third one I checked, there laid your 4x3 buck, dead as can be.
Mm-hmm.
250 yards from where you were sitting. And down in a ravine, you wouldn't have seen it unless you were 10, 15 feet from it, standing on top of that.
Yeah.
So, happy ending to that story, because Justin was having some flashbacks 2 years ago missing his deer.
I was thinking about naming the valley like the Valley of the Lost Deer, just because it just swallows up deer whole. But yeah, man, it definitely makes me think about that like 2 years ago losing that deer. Of like, but we searched that time too, like pretty extensively.
We had a blood trail that time.
We had a blood trail, yeah. And we found the like last bit of blood, and then we kept like trying to find it. Yeah. Let's see. All right, so let's go back to your story, AJ.
Yeah, so that completes my dad's deer season for the year.
Right.
He's hunted mule deer twice in Wyoming, mm-hmm. and filled tags each time.
Mm-hmm.
He's batting 1,000. Okay, so I'm not going to say retire, but it's looking pretty good.
Get a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah. So then going back to the stock, Justin and Ron, our strategy was, okay, we're going to this bluff where I took the shot the day before. I'm sorry, I didn't shoot. We spooked the deer the day before, and we're going there at first light. Get there really early. So we go in at first light and climb that same big, nasty bluff, get up top, catch our breath, and I mean, it's not quite – it's shooting light. The sun's not up yet, so it's shooting hours. But you can see – so we're looking over the ravine below, and Justin's goes, deer, deer, deer. So I was actually skylined. And so he kind of redeemed himself there and saved me from skylining myself and the deer seeing me. So we decided to lay right there, get in position. In hindsight, should have did that the day before with those two buck. I should not have closed the gap by 70 or 80 yards, try to get closer.
No.
I should have, right where I was, laid down and let them work out their ravine to me, to where they were definitely on BLM land, definitely public. We were calm. My breath was under control. Good, steady rest. You know, that's what we should have did in hindsight. That's where patience comes into the aspect of the stock.
And working to get ahead of where they're moving, too.
Yes.
And that way you can set up still.
Mm-hmm. So yesterday, got set up. I had to lay in a cactus, which... Justin picked some thorns and bristles out of my, or spines out of my elbow.
That's what good friends do.
Appreciate that. I think there's still some in there, but
I still have some in my hand, yeah. So not from that, but I stuck my hand in some when we were packing back out, but.
Yeah. Yeah. So got in good position up on the bluff. I ranged him at 270 yards, pulled up my Hornaday app on my phone to understand the MOA and the holdover, and I had to log in. I had no cell phone service, so I couldn't log in. I'll have to figure that out later if I had to log in prior or take it up the horn today. I don't know. But essentially, I couldn't get my holdover. So I knew it was probably somewhere around like 2.5, 3.5, based on past shooting. So really good tip. Those guys that print them out and stick them on their rifle, their holdovers, do it. Because you can't rely on technology.
Oh,
you can fail anytime.
That's a good tip.
Yep. And I wish I did that, but I didn't. So I did take the shot. And that he'd moved a little bit. It's probably like 280, 290, a little farther back. Hit him pretty good. He was broadside. Hit him a little low, but good. And he probably hobbled about 40 yards, laid down, and was dead. And that was it. So, yeah, it was a great morning. Justin and I hiked down. I got to work. I got him corded up, packed up. And then hiked back to my dad, where we then helped search for his deer. And that was our double yesterday. We filled two mule deer tags on this piece of land that we'd not seen, or Justin and I were, not one boot track.
Mm-mm.
Not one even close to it from the first 4 days of hunting. So it's an overlooked spot. I don't know why. It's a great travel corridor. It's got great traffic. And it's a bit of a honey hole. So we're good at finding those spots that are overlooked that hold deer. And they may not produce, you know, record book bucks if that's what you're after. But if you want a good legal deer and fill your freezer and have a good story and a great hunt, it's perfect.
Yeah.
And as you guys came down, we found my deer. You guys left because you had to take care of your meat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I stayed. I gutted my deer.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm gutting my deer, another buck and three doe come right up, right by me as I'm gutting my deer. And the buck, I would say, was smaller. I probably wouldn't have shot the buck.
He was like a yearling. Based on the picture you showed me, like a yearling buck.
Yeah, and he kept coming. He kept walking right up to me. I actually started taking pictures of him.
But I think, had you seen that deer today and not filled your tag, would you have shot him?
Yeah, that's a good possibility.
Last day. Yeah.
Last day. He's the last day last deer. Day.
But, yeah, for that area to have that many deer, it was a good area.
Yeah, you know? I like that area. I definitely... The less fond memories I had of it previously have now been pasted over by some very exciting, fun memories from this trip. But let's go ahead and wrap up. So any final thoughts or ideas or anything that you have to share with anybody? I'll start with you, AJ.
I wasn't prepared for final thoughts, but I think I've covered all my main points throughout the podcast. So, yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
Good year.
All right.
If you're going to do bikes, make sure you get a bike for what you're going to do.
That's a good final
because
thought.
The bike I had was not a bike for what I was going to do.
Yeah.
So,
but that's fair. Yeah, sorry. That's partially my fault. But. So,
just enjoy what you're going to do. We had great weather.
Oh, yeah. The weather was great.
The weather was fantastic up here. You know, it's like an Indian summer. And just fantastic. Good hunting. Good times together. I enjoy it with my son, you know. And I enjoy it with you, too.
I like your company, too. Thanks. Let's see.
Hopefully we come back next year. We'll hunt the same areas. And
I think probably going to take a break from this area for a couple years with the decline in population and CWD and EHD and blue tongue and all the hard winters, everything that's kind of like factoring in that I've been hearing about. I think going to give Eastern Wyoming a bit of a break for a while and build some points and focus on some new states, I think. So,
good news is the elk numbers are increasing.
Yep.
So elk are doing really good, but the mule deer and antelope are not doing good. And even the private ranch, we sometimes hunt for antelope. We talked to him this year, and he's like, you know, the numbers are real down. I really don't feel, you know, comfortable having you guys come hunt because I can't guarantee you'll get antelope.
Yeah. Which, I mean, we know that, but we also don't want to go on there and take a a bunch of antelope off.
No,
when the populations are down. So we took the year off from there. Let's see, my final thoughts. So I have one. I had an interesting experience happen, and I'll share this of like I shared AJ's thoughts on the stock, the shot, all that, and I shared us breaking down the deer and then a bit of the pack out portion on as a reel on Instagram. And, you know, you put things out there on social media and you always expect a bit of mixed feedback. But it's always, like, super uncool when somebody's, like, just wants to be a troll. And so I dealt back and forth with a troll yesterday based on this post. And, like, his initial comment was, oh, that's a small buck. Looks a little small for Wyoming. And I was like, great, yeah, but we're not here for the size of the deer. We're, like, looking for meat, so that it's a great thing they all taste the same. And he's like, well, then why did you quarter it up? And I was like, well, we quartered it up because we needed to get it back to the truck. And we were, like, probably a half mile, 2 miles away and weren't going to drag the deer that far. Like, and then to which he, you know, makes another snide comment about, well, if it was so big, then, or if it was whatever, if it was small, like that small, you could have drug it out, but you chose a quarter or something like that. And I was like, it's just at that point my patience ran out. I was like, what's your problem? Like, why are you size shaming AJ's deer? Like, why? Like, you're not someone who I've seen shoots any big giant deer. Plus, like, there's no room for that in the hunting community. Like, we're already a nitpicked and picked over group of individuals, that are trying to share our passion and follow our passion. And there's, you know, a lot of blows from various sides of society to have someone who may or may not be with on in our own to be like, oh, that deer is small. Well, we're not here for big giant deer. If a big giant deer walks out, yes, I'm going to shoot it. But at the end of the day, my goal is to fill my tag and take meat home. And I don't care. Like, my mule deer was smaller than AJ's. It was smaller than Art's. I don't care. I filled my tag. I'm going home. My son, my daughter, me, we all get to sit down and we get to eat game meat. And it's great. I get to cook recipes and share with you all. That's my intent. To provide family for my food, to share great content, to do things like that. I honestly don't give a crap about the antler size. It would be great to shoot a big deer, but do I need it? No.
Yeah. I think, look, and this isn't just for hunting. It's perspective of life as well. Nothing in this world matters less than someone else's opinion.
Yeah.
Right? You need to be proud. You need to be happy. You need to be fulfilled. and that's that comes from within. That's your own self-reflection. So, you know, social media is toxic in many, many ways. And I wouldn't give it a second thought. If you like this content, you like the podcast, what we're saying is helpful, great. Use it. Be a better hunter. Be a better person. Go for it. If it's not, okay, go find something else. Don't listen to it. I mean, exactly. It's that simple. Like, life's too short. Move on.
Well, I will say this. Thanks, everybody, for listening. For those that do find it helpful and enjoy it, please, whatever podcast platform you're listening to, punch that 5-star button, leave us a review, tell us what we're doing right, or, you know, tell us we're doing wrong. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.